Hey, everybody, welcome to a summertime edition of Inside Lion Athletics. There's just too much going on. We can't simply contain it in the school year, can we, Coach?
No, we're ready to go.
You've been busy. You've got kids out there having your football camps, but your players that are going to be going on Saturdays this fall have been out working as well. How's the summer been? June's almost gone.
It is. Summer one, you know, we just talked about off air. We have summer one, summer two. Summer one is basically over. We've got the rest of this week and then just a couple of days next week until we have the break of, you know, July 4th, a couple of days there, and then we start summer two. So, yeah, it's rolling. It'll be here before we know it.
Did y'all have a little celebration at the big news? No more.
It's exciting.
In purgatory.
It's exciting. There's no doubt. And I think we're ready to make a run to get to the playoffs. So I'm definitely excited about that. So are the kids.
That's going to be awesome. Talk about your new guys. There aren't many players, Coach, that you're expecting to come in that haven't arrived yet.
No, that's true. We just talked, you know, we've since spring ball, we signed 27 kids. It's probably a little bit more than that, but, you know, guys I've looked at and, you know, just kind of went over the roster this morning and the upgrades that we've made, pretty much everybody's here. We'll get a couple more next week, starting for summer too. But the nucleus of them are here.
Oh, that's awesome. Looking at, I think it's Hero Sports that kind of tries to keep up with a transfer portal situation. Kind of. Last time I looked, Coach, we only had like four or five guys listed from the portal out of FBS schools, but you've got more than that.
Yeah, we were just talking. I've got 12 FBS guys that we've got in since spring, 8 JUCOs, 4 FCS guys, 1 D1, and 1 NIA. So we've got a little mixture. Obviously, those lower schools were, you know, all-conference guys, you know, trying to work their way up, hungry guys, which that's our level. FCS is hungry guys. You know, why am I not FBS? Or why am I, you know, not FCS as a D2 player? Why am I not a D2 player as a NIA guy? So,
sure.
All hungry guys, and that's the guys I want.
Tell us a little bit about the FBS guys. They're coming. I know you've got one. You got a quarterback from Fresno State.
Yep.
That decided to portal his way to East Texas. Who else has stood out in that group?
We got another quarterback from Emory Floyd from New Mexico. He's coming in. He just got in, so he's a little behind. But you know, he's a smart kid. He's picking it up fast. We got Alabama in here. Elijah May, cornerback from Alabama. We got a couple of North Texas guys, linebacker CJ Garnett, and a defensive back Xavier Bryce. So SMU Randy Reese. We've got some players in here.
He won't be eager to show out against his old teammates.
We've been pushing him on that, pushing the buttons and trying to get every bit of information we could about him. So, no, they've got a great program, and they definitely have turned the corner at SMU. So, we're excited. I can't wait for that, you know, that week and that experience for those players and us as well and our program of where it's going. And then we get to go fly down to Florida State and see what they got.
It's going to be interesting. What's the biggest crowd you ever played in front of?
Not a lot of big crowds for me. I don't know, probably, 25, somewhere in there.
Like, well, maybe when we were at San Diego State last year.
Oh, yeah.
Would that have
– Yeah, I was thinking you said play for. I was thinking as a player.
Oh, in front. Well, but, I consider coaching and counts,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, yeah. That was probably one of the bigger ones, obviously. I was looking at the stadiums. I think SMU holds 30, 32, something like that. But Florida State is around 90, I think. So that'll be
plus,
awesome.
Plus they have Chief Osceola with a flaming spear.
Yeah, I've already got
that. Are you
going to
get out
that.
Of the locker room ahead of the team so you can watch that?
Of course. That was my team growing up was Florida State. I loved Florida State.
Did you know of Montre Holland?
I did not.
He came. He was probably there in like 2000 for 3 or 4 years. He's a Jefferson kid.
Okay.
We sent a few to the big time.
All right.
Played for the Cowboys and Saints even. But not now. Lions, everybody's always thinking, when you think about football and the prospects going forward, Ron Pease is still number one.
He is.
And that's over a year now he's held that. What's that quarterback room looking like? Probably a little better.
It is. It's competitive. You know, that's what's all you can ask for. I think we're every position, it's a competitive room, and that one especially. But Ron has done nothing but excel. He's grasped it. He's hungry. He's learned so much. Even from, you know, the last game we played to now, he wants it. And, you know, we're excited to where he's heading. Gets the ball out of his hands quickly, which I love. You know, you can protect your offensive line by doing that, getting the quick game, your screens and your three-step, what you call three-step, but you're in shotgun. It's grab it and throw it.
Mm-hmm.
So protection-wise, he's doing a great job of, you know, getting the line where they need to be, which is, you know, crucial for him to protect himself.
Right.
We'd love to say we call every play perfect, but it's not going to happen, and they've got to put us in the right spot, and he does a good job with that.
Talk about those guys that are protecting him.
Yeah.
Is it how familiar will people be with our O-line?
Real familiar. I mean, everybody's back from last year, and that's pretty much the whole theme on offense is everybody's back. We didn't lose anybody. And we've added some good pieces. We added, you know, a couple Houston Christian guys who were their best offensive linemen from there, and Kendall Sepps and Trent Savage, center. So we're definitely deeper there. And Ike, Big Ike, no one really remembers Ike. We find Ike roaming the halls when I first got here three years ago, and I honestly believe if he stays healthy, he will get a look in the NFL. And he's a big, good-looking kid and 6'6", probably 340, and runs well for that size. So now it's just he's finally taking those steps. He got hurt a little bit and was playing for some last year, and he's healthy. And his mind is caught up with what we've got going on. So exciting to see what we've got going on with everybody coming back there.
A guy like that you find roaming the halls, did he just burn out on football from high school? Did he play in high school?
He didn't play much. He just didn't play much. And, you know, he's the biggest, nicest kid we have, which we tried to get that out of him. You want kind of a nasty offensive lineman. But he can turn that switch. We've got that switch turned for him now, and I'm excited about him more than just about anybody to watch him grow and through this season.
Coach, what's happening on the defensive side of the football?
A lot of changes, obviously. We graduated 7 starters and lost 2 to go up
mm-hmm.
to FBS. And so had a big job of replacing, a lot of guys, a lot of football players. Honestly feel we're better right now on the defensive side than we were last year, and we were pretty good. So we've got some secondary guys that we brought in. Obviously, D-line is where we lost most of those guys. Losing B-Tuck was huge. But I feel like our linebacker room is overall better than it was last year. So, Coach Tyler does a really good job with that room, too, and getting them, competitive really quickly. We were trying to, do a lot of odd front in the spring. Don't know if we quite found the nose to do that, so we will be even, a lot starting out, but definitely we tinker with odd a lot. So we'll be multiple defense. It will be tough to prepare for.
Having those guys like we lost, but having leadership in their position room.
Sure.
Every year, whether you've got those guys or not, somebody's got to step up and be the leader of that group. Are those guys identifying themselves everywhere you need them to?
I think so. On the defensive backside, that's where we took the biggest hit.
Mm-hmm.
Javon's probably our guy back there as our safety. He's gonna, definitely have that room. We've got a lot of quiet leaders over there, which is good. I don't like a lot of vocal, a lot of run in your mouth. I like their play to back their game. And I do like that style of players, and the ones we brought in are very similar to that too. So I like that part of it. I want them to play with their pads and not their mouths. And that group we got in there is good.
Now, I say this tongue partly in cheek, but how are the wide receivers going to get used to all the smack they're going to have thrown at them if they got a bunch of quiet guys against them?
Well, they'll start it up. They are athletes. They can get going with the best of them. You know, and like we talked about, all our receivers are back. Plus, we lost Paul Odidi before he played a game last year, and he's able to play this year. And that room is very deep and experienced. So. We get that going really quick. They do it on their own, so I'm not worried about that. They're very competitive on both sides of the ball, and that's what I want, too. I want that part in their chest. I want the heart part, and that's what FCS is all about, the guys trying to prove a point of why they should be somewhere else.
Special teams, you've got kind of a Swiss Army knife at your disposal now. Punter, kicker, what else can you do?
We love – where we're at there. You know, I thought that was somewhere we definitely need to improve in that room. Ben, I don't have Mahan, mess his last name up, but he's going to be a really good punter for us. And I really like, we've got a high school kid, which I think that's one position. You know, you can come in from high school if you've got, nerves of steel, and you've seen a lot of freshman kickers come in and do well and just, excel there. And, Brandon Johnson, I think he's one of those type kids that could come in here and really compete for the job.
Outstanding. We've had that recently. Little baby Christoph. Absolutely. He had to be a little baby before he was hitting those big shots.
Yeah, he kicked for me in the IFL. So, yeah, he's a good one.
Outstanding. Coach, there's so much we could talk football the whole day, but you got practice and we got other coaches waiting to get on. Tell everybody else how the summer is going. It's an exciting time on campus this week. NCAA gave us, we're done. The transition era is over.
D1, baby.
Let's go to the playoffs.
Full-fledged.
Every time.
Let's do it.
All right. Folks, we're going to line up, and we hope you'll stick around with us in just a few minutes. We'll be back with more Inside Lion Athletics. Hey, everybody, welcome back to more Inside Lion Athletics. Charlie Chitwood here with you. I am now joined by Jarrett Von Rosenberg, head coach of the East Texas A&M Lion men's basketball team. This summer's different, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we're still getting used to saying East Texas, but like how it rolls off the tongue. And we're just excited about, everything. Obviously, it was a long process to get to this point, going into year 9, I believe. I've just seen a lot of change, a lot of growth in this place in general. To get to this point from when I got hired to now we're eligible for the NCAA tournament, it's been quite the journey. Had a lot of ups, a lot of downs, but we're just pushing forward and excited about this opportunity.
Hey, I just read this morning that there's some chatter at the NCAAs and the playoff field at the dance. The dance card may get bigger by a few teams. What do you think?
I'm not sure. I probably read the same article you did. I didn't even know that was in consideration. They kind of talk about it every year, but it sounds like this is more serious. So it could be exciting. I don't know at our level how much it'll actually impact us, just with our conference being a one-bid league. I'm not against more opportunities.
No, not at all. You get a chance. I think one person's comment about it was that, it makes sense if you, from a competitive standpoint, the schools that win at the lower, the lower conferences. But if they win their conference tournament and they don't automatically get like a play-in seed, they get something for the general field of 64.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people about that. I don't know if it's always bad to be in the play-in game. You get on a neutral floor, and if you happen to be the play-in, you have an opportunity to win a game against a like opponent, which I think can actually and then you get another share for your league if you're able to go win that game. Obviously everything you do in scheduling leading up to the tournament is to try to put yourself in the right position. But at the end of the day, you've got to win games. You've got to win a lot of games, and then you've got to be really good in March.
Yeah, you win a few big games at the end like that. The confidence boost in this game, these young men, it's pretty extreme. You can do a lot with confidence.
Oh, there's no doubt that you know, winning and just having that feeling, knowing how to win, that's a big part of it. You know, I've always said I don't give players confidence, the work they put in, the hours they put in the gym, and how they operate and how they, you know, blend together throughout the year. That's where I think all the confidence comes from.
Coach, you're going to find out how confident a player. You got a lot of new guys that are going to have the opportunity to show you what they can do. Practices so far, what, 3 weeks in?
Yeah, we're in our fourth week right now. This is the most excited I've ever been about a team. I think it's just new energy from our coaching staff, from myself, just the guys, the mentality of, you know, the carrot at the end of the stick it's there. And we're just excited to keep going and keep working. It's a long process, long journey. But I do like the work that's been put in so far, and hopefully we can continue it. We got a couple guys out to injury. So it's given some new guys even more opportunities, maybe more reps. So we're just looking forward to, you know, kind of getting those guys back healthy and getting to September and October and ramping this thing up.
There you go. Knock on wood and keep them all healthy. You got some real gunners that have shown they know how to put the ball in the hole.
Yeah, I think we've recruited probably a little bit more accomplished players. We'll see what they do for us, but guys that have had some success or a lot of success in their previous institutions and college locations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gives me a lot of confidence, a lot of winners, a lot of guys that have been in winning programs. They know what it looks like. They know how to approach practice and preparation for games. And so now it's just getting all the pieces together, figuring out who plays well with one another and, you know, who can set the tone for our team.
Some of the guys that have played at D2 and lower levels, the JUCO, and I'm not meaning that bad, but, yeah, you know, just smaller schools. And even in the junior college, they have their different divisions. Guys that excel there, what do you see about their game that translates to D1 no matter what?
Well, I think winners, guys that make winning plays, you know, a guy that's willing to get on the ground first. That doesn't matter if you're in eighth grade or you're in the NBA. You know, that effort and willingness to sacrifice your body for the team, that's something that always translates. Rebounding is something that I've, over my years, guys that rebound the ball well, guys that rebound above the rim, that stuff always translates.
Okay.
And the three-point line is the same distance. So if you can make a shot from three, it doesn't really matter what who else is on the floor.
All right. Putting the team together, you still got some guys that have been Lions before, adding in with a bigger cast of newcomers than we probably had in a little bit. Everybody gelling. How's the locker room coming together?
Yeah, it's been good. When it's all said and done, we'll have 10 new players. You know, with the changes to the settlement, which I'm sure Jim's talked about a little bit on air, but instead of scholarships and 13 scholarships, it's now gone to roster limits across the board. And so in men's basketball, the roster limit's 15. So what we did is we wanted to go recruit 15 players, not there's no walk-on. It's just we're building it like an NBA team from the standpoint of, you know, your roster construction. You know, you got your top end guys, you got your mid level exception guys, and you got your veteran minimum guys.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all NBA players, and they're all trying to figure out a way to impact winning.
Find them, get a way to fit them in. Any different approach? Y'all trying anything different on the floor as opposed to what you've been doing before?
I think we'll actually lean in even harder if you can imagine that. We figured out, I learned a lot last year. Last year was a great coaching opportunity for me. Obviously, the success on the scoreboard was, you know, below expectations, and that really can't ever happen again if I want to stay here. But the, you know, learning how to adapt, and, you know, we totally overhauled our offense in the second half of the season just with how we were performing on that end. And but defensively, you know, we were, for a large part of the season, we were top 20 in the country in turnovers. So for us to improve our offense a little bit, you know, if you continue to create turnovers and you do a much better job of taking care of the basketball, you got a lot more margin for error when it comes to shooting percentages and playing against opponents that might be more talented than you.
Have you seen in practice, can you see it, how well they can take care of the ball and go get it?
It's a pride. We haven't done a whole lot of live five-on-five with so many guys out, but we've been playing a lot of three-on-three, two-on-two, four-on-four, just, you know, working out of concepts offensively. And the team so far, it's just hard to tell until we ramp it up. But I think the guys do understand the importance of it. And I think this group passes the ball really well from, you know, 5-1.
Coach, some of the new guys, is there a higher basketball IQ, the higher the physical talent level goes? It doesn't always work that way.
You know, it goes back to, you know, I think just our teams is probably the most accomplished group that we've gotten in here,
mm-hmm.
As far as what they've done previously. And consistency is a huge key to, you know, us having success. The biggest difference between all the levels of high school, JUCO, Division III, Division II is the length of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get 4 weeks off essentially all year. And that's different to a lot of people. You know, JUCO, they go home all summer, and then they show up in September and they play. And they're, you know, it's just the season's so much longer. I don't think the games are more important, but because the season's so much longer, the preparation across the board from every Division I program is high. So you've got to do the same thing. You've got to get your guys prepared. And the better that we get ourselves prepared, the less we have to do in the game, and we kind of let them go play. And that's what you want to get to. I think our best team that we ever had here to this point was that second year. We returned a lot of guys, but, you know, when the ball tipped, there wasn't a lot to be said. Guys knew what we were supposed to do, whether we got it done or not, whether we made the shot or not, you know, that you can't always know how that's going to go. But,
yeah,
execution of doing what you're supposed to do as many times as you can do it correctly was very high.
What about leadership in the locker room, or do you, like some coaches, prefer to be the man?
No, it's all about the locker room. You know, our job as coaches, I believe, is, you know, we're building a ship when recruiting, right? Like, can we build a big, bad battleship, right? And the players, though, are the engine and the motor to that.
Mm-hmm.
And how fast it goes and how well it goes and, you know, how the engine runs at purr, for lack of a better term. But I'm kind of talking to our guys about that. They have to be the catalyst. They have to be the motor to what we're doing.
There you go.
We just try to turn the ship and point it in the right direction and then let them do all the work.
All right, so the first segment of practice is about to come to a close, and then you're going to start on with the second one. What's the schedule for y'all?
So we're going 8 hours a week right now. We'll do four 1 hour sessions of basketball a week, and then you got your strength and conditioning portion with the other four. But you know, it's Monday through Friday. Guys are wearing out the rim and the nets right now, and hopefully it's not just a fast starting group that kind of withers off, but like that we can be consistent with the work that we put in. We're only given so many hours, so again, it kind of goes back to we're trying to lead the direction, but those guys got to, you know, utilize the resources they have here and the opportunities. It's a nice thing about being in Commerce is there's not a professional baseball game to go to. There's not a whole lot to do in town except work on your craft and get your academics done. So, you know, our guys are really locked in, and we're having a good summer so far. We just hope it continues.
All right. Coach, we could talk all day, but we can't talk all day. We'll have to save it for another time, but it's great to get to visit with you during the summer.
Yeah, it's exciting. There's a different feeling in the air right now. There's a lot of work to be done, but just across the board with all the sports and just looking forward to this new era. The school's been around 130 years, you know, and this is the first year that entire time that we're a Division I program that has a chance to go to the postseason. So even if we don't reach that milestone this year. Hopefully someone on our team, someone in our athletic department can go dancing, and it'll be really exciting for everybody in the community.
All right. It's going to be fun. All you got to do is stick around with Lions until about mid-March, and you'll find out with us.
Go Lions.
Stick around, folks. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for a little bit more Inside Lion Athletics. Call this the June special. We're going to have Jim Curry on in a little bit to talk about why this June is more special than any other in the history of this university. But you know, how do you like being, I mean, D1, all of the restrictions, the asterisks, it's all gone, Coach. We're playing for all the marbles now.
Yeah. It's pretty special. You know, I think mainly it's super exciting for our kids and knowing that we're eligible for postseason now.
And, you know, it's got to be for you, too, and your staff, because, you know, you signed on knowing that it was kind of a purgatory job for the first couple of years simply because there was nothing after the conference tournament. And a conference ring is a thing of beauty, but anything from the NCAAs is better.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think that's everybody's ultimate goal is, you know, to make it to the NCAA tournament in postseason. So, you know, we're just super excited that, you know, we're eligible now.
So you and Rose, I mean, you're each other's biggest fans when you're not on the court. But who? What do you got to do if he gets to the playoffs before you do?
We're going to cheer him on.
They're okay. I don't know if there was any competition here, friendly, you know. Maybe you had to wear a guy's shirt. I don't know. So let's talk about your team. A lot of new faces over on the guys' side. You have a few more returnees.
That's right.
But you've had a chance to look at all of them. Are the Europeans back in?
No.
They're still playing?
Yeah, they're still over at home playing on their teams. So that's a good thing. You know, they're working out and practicing and playing. So.
And they're on the under-23 team for Austria or Germany?
Austria and Germany.
And
one
both.
Each, yeah.
Okay. Have you been keeping up with that? I mean, online, obviously, is
yeah,
the way. But.
Yeah, just online and, you know, just texting and checking in with them and stuff. So they're kind of, I think, in a break right now, and then it picks back up here.
Okay. So it's Alva over on the German side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have which of the twins playing for Austria?
I'm going to get them mixed up. I think Cora's Austria.
Yeah.
Nina's Germany.
Okay.
Because they play separate.
Okay. Ooh, they could
they
have
dual citizenship. Yeah.
Who knew that would ever come into play on basketball?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. But I did, when I talked to Nina last week, they're actually going to play on one team together, one tournament together this year. So,
you've been working with internationals for years as a coach. And keeping up with this summertime stuff, what does that do? How much does it really improve or refine their game?
I mean, I think it's as good as what they would get here. You know, they're playing against high-level competition, not just playing but practicing against high-level competition, you know, day in and day out. You know, and it's – I think it says something that you get to represent your country. So
yeah.
I think it's great for them.
Have you any reports, any box scores, anything, you know, that we can hang numbers on yet?
Not yet.
Everybody's numbers. That's very interesting. Rest of the practices, though, you've got the new faces in. You had players that were on the sideline last year now able to get in, kind of.
Yeah.
And some of them are just rock solid and starting to show the difference in the team.
Right. Yeah, you know, we have had 10 returners, 5 newcomers, 3 freshmen, 2 transfers. So we've had a good mix of kids. I'll start with, you know, the returners. We have a few out that are, you know, working themselves back in to after injury and stuff this past year.
Mm-hmm.
With Nylock, she's getting back to where she needs to be. Ari, Amaya, maybe McKenna. So we've got a few there that are, you know, on track for this coming season. So we're excited about that. You know, the rest of the returners are, you know, Tiani, Trin, and, you know, they've been really good the first 4 weeks of the summer. Newcomers, the freshmen have come in ready to work from the jump. So they, you know, they've been able to show us some stuff. And then the 2 transfers, Destin Duck from Central Arkansas and Riza from New Mexico. So, you know, they obviously, those two have a head start just because they've been somewhere before.
Sure.
Kind of know what the, you know, what we expect and what's expected of them. And kind of how college goes. So,
yeah.
But, you know, all five have been doing really well. I like the, you know, I like how tight we look and how we get along right now.
Coach, with the younger players, do you find that they're more easily adaptable to, you know, the post players, or are the guards the ones that have the heavier workload of things they got to learn?
I don't know. I think it just kind of plays itself out with where they've been and, you know, high schools they've been to and stuff. I don't know if it's guard post. I think it's just kind of what they've been taught growing up and fundamentals and stuff. So, and it ranges,
mm-hmm.
You know, from not a lot to a lot. So you kind of get a mix of it every year.
Okay. Leadership, you know, locker room's always an important place. You don't have a couple of your team leaders just by virtue of their seniority, but when they get here. But is anybody kind of stepping up and taking a leadership role there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Amaya has been doing a really good job. Ari, even with those two on the sideline right now, you know, they've really taken it upon themselves to, you know, be those cheerleaders, those people on the sideline that are helping and pushing and teaching as well. And then Tiani, and she's on the floor, and she's really stepped up.
Good deal. You starting to get pictures in your head of what this team can look like yet, or is that still, you got to get the other three in before you get the whole picture?
I mean, obviously it's nice when everybody's here, but I think you can kind of see the pieces and how they would fit together, and you know, knowing those three will be back, I mean, I think it helps even more. So you know, obviously not the whole picture, but
yeah,
you can definitely see pieces.
Rose was talking about how the I lost my train of thought on that.
It's okay.
Oh, recruiting.
Yeah.
Are you finding you can win more battles recruiting since the asterisks are all gone from here?
I think time will tell.
Yeah?
I mean, obviously it's been like 12 or 24 hours.
Well, they knew. I mean, they kind of knew.
Yeah, but I think it's now, it can't be used against us.
Yeah.
For real. You know what I'm saying? Like there's a difference. Like, people can still say it, so
okay.
Now they can't.
I think last year, I think Rose said that we had one guy that we were able to beat out another school for his services last year.
Yep.
And then this year, it's like all the newcomers. Somebody else wanted them too, but we got them all. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if you were finding that in the same way. Obviously, the numbers.
Like I said, I think we will as time rolls on a little bit, so. Yeah.
Okay. How about scheduling this year? It's different. You've got 22 conference games you'll be playing.
A lot of conference games. That's right.
What are you going to do with the others?
We'll play at Oklahoma State, pretty early in November, both games, both before Thanksgiving.
Are those going to be back to back?
Not back to back.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
Two separate trips.
Whew.
But they're both before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so. And they're both pretty close too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, and then we'll have two non-ones, and then the last three are two return games from what we played last year when we played on the road at Abilene and Texas
mm-hmm.
Southern, and then we're starting another home-and-home that we'll start on the road this year.
Now, the way I understand it, 31 games is the schedule limit, mm-hmm. but you're going to go with 29.
Yeah, we're doing 29 just because we're not in an MTE this year, so.
Fair enough. Are those gauge differently in how they impact the game count? Is it still if you go to an MTE, is it still just count for one? Or?
Yeah, you can play 31. If you go to an MTE, you can play 31 games.
Got it.
On the women's side, I really don't know what the men's rules are.
Right. Well, if you've ever seen me call a game, I don't either. So.
But yeah, I mean, I think that'll change. I think, you know, the NCAA is looking at some different things for numbers of games and stuff. So, and we'll look at getting into an MTE in the future.
Okay. Schedule for the rest of the summer. Y'all are going to be coming up on a little break. Is that break a weekend or a week?
They have a whole week off next week for our break. You know, we're here for 10 weeks, and we're only allowed to work out 8 of those.
Okay.
Per NCAA rules. So we typically go 4 weeks on, give them a week off around 4th of July, which kind of hits perfectly for a break, and then we'll hit 4 more weeks when they get back, July 7th. So,
what kind of team building do y'all do? Y'all go fishing?
Yeah, you know, we've actually been doing quite a bit of stuff. Richie, the men's trainer, has been doing some leadership stuff with our kids, which has been really, really good. We have a game day. I want to say game night, but it's during the day on Friday. So we're doing that this Friday. And probably hitting up the water park in Greenville at some point.
There you go.
Some of them want to go fishing, though. I just need some fishing rods.
Okay, Lion Nation, you heard it. They are in need of fishing poles. Throw in a couple of hooks and line and bobbers, and we'll turn them loose. Catfish, right. Beware. Yeah. You know, Colby Carthel, one time he took his football coaching staff and their preseason get-together, they went to a local pond and learned how to go noodling. Was that a thing in Ohio growing up? Where you would stick your arm into a hole and pull out a catfish?
No. I would never do that in a million years.
I would never either. If I can't see it, I ain't going in there. There's freshwater sharks out there somewhere. I've heard of them, but I've never seen one. And I don't want to find one. Coach, thanks for coming on. It's summertime. It's a great day to be a Lion with the news from yesterday. Folks, stick around. Jim Curry's going to be on next, and we really get into it then. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Last segment of Inside Lion Athletics for this week, this month probably.
Summer edition. Curry. Summer one edition, right?
Special edition. This is like almost hot off the press. We've been talking about it all year. We've been waiting for it all year. And the opportunity to be done with the reclassification process in 4 years has been done in 3.
That's right.
And you got the official blessing on Monday evening and cracked the bold gold immediately, right?
There it is. There it is right there. Yeah, exciting. It was cool. They gave us a call. They called President Rudin. They called myself and just said, hey, board's wrapped up. You guys are a go and everything's good. And I was kind of waiting for like a firework or something to go off.
Right.
But no, we just stepped into the next meeting and we just kept cracking at it. So, but it was good, though. It's exciting. And you know, I think as we've seen from the response from just our folks as we've announced it too, there's a sense of pride, I think, that some folks are feeling across the board, and certainly some accomplishment to be in this position and understandably so, as there should be. Really excited about what's coming. And you know, I think there's been a lot of work put into it, obviously, for many years, not just the last 3, but I think even leading into that. A lot of thought, a lot of decision-making that's kind of gone into it that I think now is being kind of reaffirmed in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we look at what's happening with just the makeup of our teams, the way that we can position ourselves in recruiting conversations. I think some folks are going to see some really good early returns in terms of what we've been able to do to position all the momentum of the university.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was kind of one of the cool things about writing the press release with Avi. You know, we were sitting there looking at it, and, you know, we were talking about how this comes at the same time as all this growth and achievement at the university. Record enrollment, R2, largest graduating class ever. That in and of itself is a headline, you know, and then you throw in, you know, things that we're doing here in athletics, particularly the reclassification decision. And again, I think it tells a bigger story about what's going on in East Texas.
You think about some of the people that are like, they weren't throwing fuel in or gas money. They were just kind of, wait a minute, I don't know if you should do that or not. When you throw out those bigger numbers, it makes it pretty clear that a lot of other people were noticing and wanted in.
Yeah, there's no question. And you know, one of the things I think that was really cool and maybe validating in some sense too, maybe the timing of it probably struck me more, but I mean, just look at this past weekend. We have a tweet that goes out by John Rothstein, who's one of the biggest college basketball reporters in the country, about our game and our matchup with UConn in December, right? And so he puts that out. That tweet alone has 1.5 million views on it.
Get out of here.
1.5 million. And on top of that, it gets picked up by others who've got even bigger audience than he does. And, you know, one guy retweets it, quote tweets it, and it's got, you know, 630,000 views. You know, so you aggregate all these views across all these different, a handful of folks, you're over 3 million views just on that alone. And, I mean, to just kind of put that into context, like, there will be SEC games that are played this fall that don't get 3 million viewers on them.
That's
crazy. Like, many, honestly. So it's just what does Division I do to create a platform for more notoriety, attention, awareness about the university as a whole? Because his tweet didn't say East Texas A&M men's basketball. I mean, everybody knew what we were talking about.
Yeah.
It was East Texas A&M. And so, you know, people are now becoming more familiar, more engaged. And then, you know, you fast forward to Monday morning, and I'm listening to Sirius XM on the drive in, and they've got Dusty and Danny's morning show, you know, biggest college sports morning show there is on XM radio, and they're talking about East Texas A&M. They were talking about it in the context of some of these early games in the schedule. Again, Danny Cannelli's he's a Florida State grad, obviously. Dusty Kvorchek, he's a Oklahoma guy who's from Texas. So, like, they see what's going on, and they're talking about us as well. So we're on these platforms that we could honestly never get access to, with attention, awareness, and viewership that we could never get access to but for a move like this. And then what it gets us the opportunity to do is tell our bigger, broader story about what we're doing as a university. So it's not just about basketball. It's not just about athletics. It's about everything going on here in East Texas.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
People stopping Rose on the street to get his autograph? I mean, 3 million at least.
Just yours.
Oh, no. I've shortened it. That's incredible.
It's incredible.
We asked Avi before if how long it would have taken the Lions at the Division II level to get 3 million views on anything. And it's several years worth.
Yeah, I mean, it would take a long time.
Five.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's not a knock. It's just the reality of what the platform that Division I affords institutions. And, you know, again, part of that too is positioning yourself for that type of opportunity. You know, if we don't schedule UConn in men's basketball, we don't get the opportunity for that, right?
Right.
If we don't schedule SMU in Florida State, we don't get the opportunity to be one of only two FCS institutions in the country whose first two games of the year are going to be on national linear TV. We're going to go 3 years in a row when we include next year and announce that game. 3 years in a row of opening football on national linear TV. Those opportunities don't come about unless you put yourself in a position for those. And, again, they don't come about if you're not D1 as well.
Is there a formula that you can figure out the difference between an expected audience for a linear and a non-linear broadcast?
I mean, it just depends on what other inventory's on at the same time. So
makes sense.
That's the biggest piece. I mean, and that's part of the makeup of how they put – you know, games together. It's why, you know, you'll set the first 3 weeks and then they'll go basically a 12-day, 14-day notice on the kick time thereafter, because they're trying to figure out how to put the mesh together to create the best viewership across the aggregated
right
games and the available inventory. What's so kind of interesting too about, you know, us this year too is that with these bigger conferences in the Power Four, there's more inventory of games within those conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get a linear broadcast opportunity for someone like ourselves, an FCS institution, not just once, but twice in back-to-back weeks on the ACC network, it's honestly really hard to do because, again, they've got, you know, 10, 12, 14 games of inventory in any one week that they have to kind of balance out across mm-hmm. all the networks that they're partnered with. And some people just get relegated to digital at that point, even in the Power Four.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think it's really special for us to be able to not just have it once, but have it twice this year.
That's great. And Bobby Hurley's got to try and get by Rose one more time. It's all right. We get the chance.
we get the chance and we get the platform. And last year that game was on FS1, national linear broadcast for the Lions. Obviously hoping that's going to be the same this year, but, you know, we'll see as we get ahead. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, again, continuing to position and put ourselves in a position to be able to showcase not just Lion Athletics but East Texas A&M University as a whole.
Jim, I want to go back to the reclass just a little bit, mm-hmm. because it was such a big effort, and it took a lot of hands to make that cake. Who in the department or in the university has been kind of an unsung hero in the background doing a lot of mill work that needed to be done to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you asking that question, and I'm probably not going to have a good enough answer because it's countless
people. Yeah, it couldn't be one.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible what it takes, and you know it going in, and you have an appreciation for it, I think, day to day when you're working in it, you know, at any institution I was at. But to kind of be in this position now where you're having to build it in some sense too. I mean, we're building it in many respects, right? It gives you a greater appreciation for the effort. And again, like, kudos to Dr. Rudin for having the foresight in that regard to understand that, you know, you've heard him say it a million times, but, you know, we're not just going D1 as an athletics department, we're going D1 as a university. And that like sentiment is so true for not only the way that we have to operate moving forward, but I think also what it takes to get into this position and then what it takes day in and day out. You know, at the end of the day, like I say this all the time, like we're one part of a broader ecosystem of this university. And, you know, every single unit within athletics has got a very direct group across campus that they have to engage with daily to do the work that we need to get done over here. Mm-hmm. So you cannot do it alone in athletics. Yeah. You just can't do it alone. So it's a full team sport is really what it is. And so, you know, I for sake of hating to want to leave anybody out, like when I literally say it took everybody at the university, it literally took everybody. It took the academic side. It took the philanthropy side. It took the finance and administration side. Took athletics, it took research, I mean, literally, it took research and development, it took, the academic advising, it took admissions and enrollment, student affairs, president's office, it's incredible, everyone that's involved in it. And honestly, for us to have sustained success at this level, not only does it take that, but it even takes an even more intentional effort. Not just within the university community, but alums, local community, region, you know, everything. It takes everything. So, yeah.
On your staff, are how many of them, if any, had participated in a reclassification process before?
None that I'm aware of. Yeah, none that I'm aware of. I mean, it's such a
it's a niche.
It's a very
situation.
Niche thing. Yeah, it's very niche. I mean, right now, so we had 6 in our cohort, which is a very high number for this process. Right now, there's only 2 that are in the next cohort, one in the next year cohort, and one in that cohort after that. And, I mean, if anybody followed a little bit of the news headlines, and they probably didn't because it was buried underneath the headline, but, you know, they're talking about a potential moratorium on this now, from schools being able to reclass from D2 or D3 up to D1, you know, kind of let some things settle. Well, if that goes through later this summer, which is when they plan to take a look at this, then, you know, talk about timing being everything, right, in terms of the decision to make this move and position the university this way. You know, you can never kind of forecast the future, right? I mean, no one has a crystal ball, but I don't know if anybody – I don't know the last time they've talked about a moratorium like that. I mean, they'll do moratoriums from time to time in the NSA on certain things. Like, legislatively, there was a big one a couple years ago because there was some governance redesign. That'll probably happen again with some governance redesign. But to have a reclass moratorium potentially on the horizon here is significant. But it's really significant in terms of the decisions that were made, you know, many years ago to say, okay, we're going to take advantage of the opportunity in the moment and make this move.
and we had the door closed right behind us.
In before the bell.
That's it. So another question about it. When I know you didn't go up to NCAA on Monday for the meeting, but did y'all like slip those team GPAs up there? Just a little extra insurance on making sure it went the way?
Hey, hey! Credit to the students. They got it done. They got it done. I appreciate you mentioning academics. And, you know, we felt like we were having a pretty good semester as the grade reports were rolling in during the spring. And, you know, we kind of saw what was going on. But then to get the final report and have a 3.17 semester GPA and, you know, have, you know.
For the whole athletic department.
Whole athletics department.
A B+.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we have 300 and this spring we had 316 student athletes, 229, so that's about 72% had a 3.0 or better. It's crazy.
That's
awesome.
And
then 74 O's out of that 316. So it's just an incredible. And you know, so, I mean, it's like you hesitate to want to even call out an individual sport because of how impressive it was in aggregate, but you know, football hitting a 3.0.
Because that's a lot of bodies. That's a lot of guys in the classroom. A
lot of bodies. Exactly right. And, you know, it's just it's a lot of bodies. There's a lot of guys, you know, again, movement and everything like that. But it's just, you know, for everybody to kind of get on board there and make that a priority, yeah. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, what Coach Val's done since she got here. I mean, I think her first semester here, their GPA was a 2.8 that spring of 23. When she got here, and then now I think this past semester was like a 3.4, 3.5.
Great, Scott.
So, I mean, but that's across the board, you know, like softball has a 3.64, and they've got 23 girls on the roster, and 21 of them had a 3.0 or better. I mean, it's like.
It would take me two semesters added together to get a 3.0.
So, again, it's just, you know, and that's on the heels of having, you know, 65 graduates in the spring. So again, like it's one of those where, you know, you know, we're coming on we're getting ready for the reclass to be done and be, you know, full membership status. And you want to be going like anything, you want to be going the right direction,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you get ready to launch here. And, you know, we feel really good that we're going the right direction. You know, I kind of said it to the coaches after the grade report got ran. I said, you know, there's a lot of things we can get better at. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, in terms of keeping the main thing, graduating at the rate we are with the GPAs we've got, I mean, it's the best GPA, semester GPA I've had in the whole D1 era. I mean, so we've got that. The CUME GPA across 316 is 3.21. So, you know, it wasn't a flash in the pan. These kids have been consistent in their achievement. So, you know, where we are academically, and then we talked about it a little bit on some previous episodes at the end of the spring. You know, our best finish in the Southland Commissioners Cup standings. And, you know, actually we had never finished ahead of more than one school
mm-hmm.
ever. And we did that this year. And actually what's really interesting is they're going to redo the calculations moving forward because we might've talked about this, we might not, but before they were aggregating points across all sports.
Yeah,
so if you sponsored, you know, 15 sports,
right.
And we only sponsor 14, then you're always likely going to beat us because
right.
we can only score in 14. So what they're actually going to do is actually score only in 14, which is the league minimum for what you got to have in terms of sports sponsorship. So that'll level it a little bit for us. And actually, if we would have this year's the new calculations moving forward, we would have moved up 3 spots in the standings.
Wow.
But just with the same finish we've had across all sports, all schools, all sports. So that's how significant it was in terms of where we were, you know, having to compete against that, you know, the way the calculations were. But so that's why I've always focused on not our place, but who have we beaten out
mm-hmm.
and how are we elevating against relative to our previous position. But then also to see, again, our climb under that new scenario. So excited, again, grateful for, you know, and just calling out the progress on the playing surface. Even though we know we've got things we want to do and some things we left on the table and some progress to make there. But, again, we just want to get better. We want to get better every day in what we do. And if we can get better every day in what we're doing, then in aggregate, we're going to get there.
you've been on the other side of the coin where when Florida State would play schools reclassifying. I mean, did y'all ever do that then?
I'm trying to think if we ever played a reclass school I was there. We played Idaho after they reclassed up to FBS, and then they moved back down to FCS.
Treated them that well, did you?
Yeah, 70-7 we beat them. Mm. But I don't think we ever played a reclass school while I was there.
I'm just wondering if the leadership at a university or of a program thinks a tiny bit less of their opponent, not to shame them or anything, but they're not at our level yet. And it's true, but
I think – I don't know. I don't know if it's – I'll say this. I this is just my feeling on it, maybe kind of my gut feeling on it. Anecdotally, I think there's always that in the back of your head, and whether you're on either side of the equation, right? So one of the things that we've worked really hard on in the last 2 years is trying to close the gap with how the student athlete experience feels like relative to their peers, really even at the highest levels.
Mm-hmm.
So to share a story with you, we bring Oklahoma here for softball last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working on trying to improve this experience for our student athletes in terms of everything that touches them, whether it's equipment, training, team travel, what have you. Well, Oklahoma rolls down here on the same charter bus that we drive with, company that we drive with. They roll out. We had done a pretty significant investment in some of our equipment, hitting the same bats that we're hitting with. They roll out with some of the technology that we've got.
Mm-hmm.
They roll out post-game meal, same type of post-game meal that we'll eat. Honestly, the only difference at that point in time was just the apparel provider they were with, right? So we've closed that gap now, right? And so now what we can affirmatively state, at least if we use that example, is that our softball student athletes are outfitted, equipped, eating or fueling, and traveling on the same things as Oklahoma softball, right? So there's a real kind of, I think, mental side of this too. Like, as we've gone through the Nike ordering process, I've seen the type of apparel that they provide to those elite-level programs, and I'm like, I want that shoe. Because that's the same style shoe that they're going to get at SMU and Florida State this year. Like, I want that polo with that logo because it's going to look exactly like that. And again, I want our student athletes to walk off the bus and feel they're on the same playing level, because they are, right, as their opponent. And I don't care if that's Alabama or Alabama A&M. Like, doesn't matter to me. So that's what's been really, I think, exciting and kind of quietly behind the scenes. We've been really intentionally working on is to make sure that everything that touches their experience as a student athlete is on a comparable playing level as their opponent. And I don't care where the opponent, what conference they're in. So that's what we've been able to do. And we're still working on it too. We're not 1,000% there, but when we roll out this year in football, when we roll out this year in hoops and all these other sports, it's going to look different, and it's going to look different in a good way. And these student athletes should be really confident that they've been given the tools to really maximize what they're doing. And what I like about it too is now it kind of puts it back on the athlete as well. Mm-hmm. Right now we're going to close this gap, and now it just comes down to who gets out there, who's doing the work, who's doing the preparation, the training. Everything that comes with that before game day to then go out there and compete.
Love every bit of it.
There it is.
Right. Last thing, and I meant to bring it up earlier but forgot, the possibility of the NCAA basketball championship tournaments being the field being increased as many as 76. Is that right?
Yeah. We kind of talk about numbers in Division I.
Right.
Division I has expanded quite a bit since it was 64, then 68.
So with our class in, there's 367.
Oh, now New Haven's new this year.
Five.
So 365. 365. And I think St. Francis is next year they're out. So, yeah, 365.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, 64 out of 365 is hard to do.
It's one out of six.
Yeah, it's the hardest tournament to get into of every sport in Division I. So, you know, so that's where for me, like, 68, 76, like, I don't know if I'm going to lose sleep on that.
Mm-hmm.
So long as the opportunity, so long as the experience for a student athlete that is participating in the tournament doesn't diminish. That's the only thing, because it is.
Then that's important.
Super special. Like, and I'm so excited because we're going to have student athletes that are on this campus right now that whatever sport it is, like, they're going to, someone's going to do it. Someone's mm-hmm. going to do it, right? And, you know, and we had student athletes this year that could have done it in track.
Like, sure.
We know that for a fact. So someone's going to do it, and I, like, it's such an awesome thing. Like, and I don't care what the sport is, but March Madness on the men's and women's side is different. It's different. Even though it's just it's incredibly special in those sports outside of that, like, it's different when you walk into the arena during the March, during men's and women's basketball tournament. Different.
Well, let's go find out.
Let's go get it.
Let's do it.
Let's go get it.
We're going to do it right now because we've been on the air for 25 minutes almost, and we could go on for another. But we'll save some of it for when we come back. What, we're going to do this in July.
We're going to do this after Media Day, I think. Football Media Day.
Okay.
I think that's when we were talking
about. That's a good time to do it.
Yeah, I think we were going to we'll give Media Day its shine.
Mm-hmm.
And then that following week, teams report. They're here. Well, they're here now, too.
Josephine Street Steakhouse.
Okay, there we go.
That's San Antonio, baby.
Perfect.
All right.
Awesome.
Hey, lines up. Thanks for tuning in again, and we'll see you next time.